You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and this is Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I have in studio with me today Minnesota State Representative for District 54B, Tony Juergens. Representative Juergens, it's good to have you back.
Good to be back, as always, Mike. Thank you.
We're about 6 weeks now into the session so far, and things are moving a little bit here and there. There's a lot of different things going on. The one thing I'd like to start with is the state has established a website for determining your eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine. And I was wondering if you could go over that a little bit for us.
Yeah, it's the Vaccine Connector is what it's called. And I encourage all of our listeners to go to this website. You can just do a quick Google search on Minnesota Vaccine Connector. Maybe KDWA is linking to it.
Yeah, we've got a link to it.
Webpage as well. And you can just fill out your name and your information. And it just gets you on a list so that the state will contact you when you're eligible to come in and get vaccinated. I went through the website myself just to see what it was like and to get on the list. It only took about 5 minutes or so. They asked some questions that are optional, like race and ethnicity and things like that you can choose to leave blank if you want to. But basically your contact information, what some of your occupation is so that they can maybe determine your the level of need for you for based on who you come in contact with and things like that. But one of the things that they ask is that you are readily available to come and get vaccinated on short notice, because if that happens when they have openings, they may go through the list and start texting people or calling people and mm-hmm. have you come in on short notice.
And some of the vaccines have a very kind of short shelf life too, so if they call you, it's probably because one of the reasons you need to come in right away is because those vaccines don't last very long
right.
on
Maybe
the
they
shelf.
Have some cancellations or something, and they have those. They don't want them to spoil. They want to be able to use them, so they may call you in at short notice to come in. So I would encourage people to, take a look at that and consider signing up for it.
I remember hearing one story within the past couple of weeks where a medical team had a shipment of this vaccine, and because of weather or traffic or something, we're not going to be able to get it to the facility where they're going to be distributing it. So they just started going to cars along the highway. Hey, if we don't use this up, we're going to lose it. So would you like a vaccination?
Well, I saw on social media late last week that Commissioner Mike Slavik posted on social media that if you are willing to drive to Greater Minnesota, go to this website. I don't remember what it was. One of the pharmacies mm-hmm. That had a lot of openings and few openings in the metro area. So right. He was encouraging people to take a look. If you're willing to drive a little further to get vaccinated, that they had available open slots at one of the pharmacies.
Sure. And I understand that we have a good number of people already in the program and being vaccinated. Where are the numbers standing on that?
The latest numbers that I got were that Minnesota is now at about 1 million people or 1 million vaccinations, and that's 11% of the population that's been vaccinated with at least one dose. And keep in mind that the vaccinations require two doses, and I think that of the 11 million, I think that was about 600 and some thousand have had both doses. So we're getting there. We're getting the vaccination numbers up. And I think that's one of the reasons that the governor also opened up schools. That's one of the other announcements that starting on the 22nd, more middle and high school students will be in person, and that by March 8th that they expect that all students will have the option of either hybrid or in-person learning for those upper grades.
And we received a notification from the school district recently about that. The thing that they were focused on is that Governor Walz had removed the two-week interval for bringing grade levels back. So the local school district here was going to start bringing them back in sooner, especially the 10th and 11th graders who were going to be out until sometime way in March.
Yeah, and this is, in my opinion, I think this is long overdue. I was glad to see the governor move in this direction. We talked about it last week that, mm-hmm. Our preference would have been to leave those decisions up to the local school boards. This is going in the right direction. It's still coming down from, the governor's executive orders rather than the local school boards. But in my opinion, he's moving in the right direction. And the reasoning that he gave for that is, you know, we're seeing, because of the vaccinations that we're talking about, more and more people are getting vaccinated. The positives, the test positive, or the test rates have been below 5% positive for several days now, or possibly even over a week. That's one of the good signs that we've been watching. And then also the number of hospitalizations has also been decreasing. So things appear to be moving in the right direction. Of course, we can always see a setback, but for right now, that's a great sign.
It is. The vaccination rates, you talked about 11% of the population. Is that pretty evenly spread out over the state, or does it show a concentration in the metro area as the population is concentrated there?
It's pretty well around the state. I think that the concentration level is a little higher in the metro area. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, they've got just there's more people for one thing, but you see the more concentrated vaccination sites as well. Although we've all heard of some of the stories at the Minneapolis Convention Center with problems that they're having with some of the vaccine sites. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a constituent who called me while they were in line at the convention center, and they were, I think they had to wait, you know, a couple hours after their appointed time, just because they were so far behind.
Sure.
And talking to a constituent today that had an appointment at the convention center and drove into Minneapolis and got there, and there was a sign on the door that they were closed for the day. They were blaming it on the weather down south. I'm not sure what the connection was there, but they, so people were driving in to get vaccinated and hadn't been notified. And so they ended up, you know, making a drive in for nothing.
And it sounds like a kind of a communication thing that is not uncommon with a newer system, or when we're starting to do things in a different way. Of course, it's frustrating if you're one of those patients driving in and then you get turned around.
Right, you feel like you win the lottery and then you find out
it was a dime. Yeah, I won a dime in the lottery.
Right,
but I would expect, pardon me, I would expect that those wrinkles will be ironed out soon, that as the process gets moving back again, that the communication will improve. You know, there has to be some kind of notification through that vaccine connection site where you can sign up and get notifications for this kind of thing.
Yeah, they do. They ask for an email address and they ask for
a phone number.
Sure. And with your phone number, they ask if you can receive text messages at that number. So, you know, I would expect that's how they would communicate. And you know, that the challenges that we're talking about, is that's one of the reasons a lot of people have recommended that rather than setting up these temporary sites, that we just go through clinics and hospitals and, you know, medical centers that are accustomed to doing this. You know, they've got the processes in place. They have to scale up for an undertaking like this, but they're perhaps in a better position to do that, to scale up and to accommodate the large numbers of people for vaccinations, more so than a temporary site, even though the temporary sites are chosen because they're big and they can house a lot of people.
Sure.
That's why they're choosing, like, Minneapolis Convention Center, for example, or NFL stadiums across the country, or NBA stadiums for across the country. You hear that as well. They can accommodate large masses of people. But I think that in a lot of cases, the clinics and the hospitals are in a better position because that's what they do every day. They're just kind of scaling up.
And it seems to me like the testing, the COVID testing thing, when it kicked up last year, the hospitals and clinics were able to get those going up and running. And I don't remember hearing much of any problems with accessibility, shall we say, to testing and the process. I went through it a couple of times, and it was very easily done in that environment.
Yeah, and people are accustomed to going to their own clinic. They they know where it is. They know where to park. They know all of those things. And I feel bad for you know, people that might be coming from greater Minnesota to go to the convention center, for example, that aren't accustomed to driving in Minneapolis. They're not sure where to park and things like that, especially if they show up on a day that then they get there and find out that
it's closed.
Closed, yes.
One of the other topics that we're going to cover today, and we're going to move on just a little bit here, is we talked last week about a safe account for cities that may be experiencing a rise in civil unrest or that kind of situation, thinking specifically about the trials coming up in Minneapolis here pretty soon. And I'd like you to bring us up to date on what is going on with that fund.
Yeah, we talked, it might even have been 2 weeks ago now, Mike, that we talked about this. The governor has requested $35 million in an account to be used to help pay for the costs of the likely protests or riots surrounded around the trials of the former Minneapolis police officers in the George Floyd death. And we had a bill. So really, this last week, a lot of things happened, and we're back where we started.
Sure.
The Democrats have the majority in the House, so they have enough votes to pass any bill that they choose to with all of their members. And the first day that they brought this bill up, and the bill, a lot of policy got added into the bill. It's not mm-hmm. just a clean bill like the governor asked for that sure. says here's $35 million and here's how you request it and here's who gets it and that sort of thing, meaning the law enforcement agencies that go in to assist in St. Paul or Minneapolis or wherever there's an issue. And a lot of the policy got added to it, and the Republicans really weren't at the table to determine what the bill would end up looking like.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Republicans weren't putting up any votes to pass it. Well, again, the Democrats have votes to pass it on their own if they want to, but they had some of their members that had their own issues with the policy.
Sure.
And so the bill was brought up on Monday of last week, and before we could even get to a vote, they knew they didn't have the votes to pass it, so rather than go through that and have it fail, they tabled the bill. Well, between Wednesday or Monday and Thursday, there wasn't any discussion that I'm aware of with the Republicans. And they brought the bill up another time. And so I assumed that they had the votes within their own party, that they were going to be able to pass the bill.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the case. After about 3 hours of debate, and the bill came up for a vote, and there were a handful of Democrats also voting no on it, then it got really interesting. And we don't need to get into too much of the weeds here. But the bill was set to fail. And on a roll call vote, and so we ended up the majority leader asked if we could. Well, it's a procedural thing. Bottom line is they reopened the bill
okay.
and tabled it again, and so the defeat that was set to happen didn't technically happen.
Right.
through a procedural move. So my guess is what will happen. Is, you know, the Senate's got their bill. It's not a companion bill. It's a totally separate bill that I don't think would fly in the House.
Right.
And the Senate or the House bill that they had wouldn't fly in the Senate. My guess is that in the end, there's a Republican version of the bill that is really close to what the governor asked for, with just a couple of minor changes to it. My guess is that at some point very soon, that's going to end up being the bill.
Okay.
And really the difference is in the governor's bill, state departments like the State Patrol and the DNR could also tap into the $35 million funds. And the Republican version says, you know what, the state already pays for the State Patrol and the DNR, so mm-hmm. We can still pay them from the state.
Sure.
And let's reserve that $35 million for local agencies, so sheriff's departments and local police departments that come in to assist. So
right.
That's what I hope to see the final bill look like. And hopefully then we'll have bipartisan support on it, because I don't think this should be a partisan issue. I don't think that the issues are Democrat and Republican. I think the issue between party lines just has to do with who came up with the bill, not necessarily something that you would consider partisan one way or another. So hopefully we can come to a bipartisan agreement and get that passed for the governor. Now, a lot of people are still saying, well, wait a second, that's still bailing out Minneapolis, and greater Minnesota shouldn't have to pay for, you know, to help police Minneapolis. And that might be true, especially right now when Minneapolis is down over 200 police officers.
Right.
They're going to need a lot more help now than mm-hmm. they did a year ago, because they have, you know, 200 fewer police
fewer
officers
resources,
of their
yeah.
own to draw
exactly.
upon. The other side of that, though, is the argument that I made here a couple weeks ago. Well, what about the Hastings Police Department or the Cottage Grove Police Department or Dakota County Sheriff or Washington County Sheriff? If they get called in to help, who's going to pay for that? Because if the funds aren't there to help pay for them, then we, the local taxpayers, are paying for it anyway.
Right.
So, I think that we need to keep that into consideration, too, that this isn't, in a way, yeah, it's helping to bail out Minneapolis, but it's helping to pay for our local police force if they're called into action.
Sure. Yeah, it's a perspective. It's a focus. You got to take a broader focus on the issue at large.
Right.
Of course, it is going to probably benefit Minneapolis through the trials that are coming up. But if, like you say, if they do call someone, local here, mm-hmm. county or the city, that is going to be used to help them, which is helping us.
Right, right, exactly. And, here's the thing that you can't lose sight of the fact that the trial hasn't even started yet. It's a couple of weeks away, and it's like we're expecting to have protests. We're expecting to have riots. Which is a sad state. I mean, it's almost like we're, predicting the future.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I know we have to be prepared.
Sure.
Prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
Exactly.
But, man, it just seems like, how about we just don't have riots? Wouldn't that be?
It would be. I would guess too that a lot of that feeling, if it's coming from the authorities, they probably have it on some kind of credible information that, they're monitoring these groups that are getting out and doing that. Maybe they have some credible information that's going to go.
Well, and that's true. They do monitor these sites, and they act on credible information. But I also worry that are we inviting it? Are we, by talking about it so much, are we saying, hey, come on in and protest and riot because we're ready for you? So
two-edged sword there. Yeah,
we have First Amendment rights to peacefully protest, and let's just hope that it stays peaceful and that they don't turn into riots like they did last summer, and that people just lawfully protest and they don't cause problems, and hopefully everything will work out well.
That would be good. We have about run out of time, Representative Juergens. So once again, as always, I'd like to give you the opportunity to provide your contact information if anybody or your constituents have questions or concerns.
Absolutely. They can call 651-296-3135 or email rep.tony.juergens@house.mn.
Thank you. You are listening to Community In-Depth. I would like to thank my guest for this segment, Representative Tony Juergens. Thank you, sir, for coming in again.
Thank you, Mike, and I'll see you in another week.
It sounds like a plan to me. You are tuned to KDWA AM 1460 FM 97.7.